Hello everyone, and thank you for joining today's webinar. I'm Elizabeth Kerr from Business Forward, and I'll be moderating our conversation today. Currently, all lines are in listen-only mode. We're pleased to welcome Nat Wood, Vice President at Rational 360, a strategic communications firm here in Washington, D.C., and he's here to provide a training session on how to discuss public policy issues from a business perspective. We'll use healthcare reform as an example, but these lessons and tips should be valuable no matter what policy issue is affecting your bottom line. This will be an interactive briefing, so after Nat's presentation, we'll have time for your questions and throughout the presentation as well. Please feel free to ask questions about general media and advocacy techniques or any public policy issues that you might be considering. We're also eager to hear examples from the business leaders on the phone about action they've taken in their local community or at a state or federal level. For those of you who are new to our programming, Business Forward organizes local roundtables, Washington fly-ins, conference calls, webinars, and media trainings for more than 100,000 business leaders across the country. And at these briefings, entrepreneurs, investors, small business owners, and executives all get the chance to brief policymakers on how to help Washington work better with business and how to accelerate the economy. To date, more than 600 mayors, members of Congress, and senior administration officials have participated in our programming, and that's all thanks to the support of more than 60 of America's largest and most respected companies. Before we get started, I need to cover a few housekeeping items. First, as part of the email confirmation you received when you registered for this event, it should say Open Visual Interface. If you click on that, you can view today's presentation. The slides are also available on our website at businessfwd.org. Just look for the post advertising this event. As I mentioned, there'll be time for questions and comments after Nat's remarks or throughout. You can participate in three ways. You can press 1 at any time on your telephone keypad, and you'll be entered into the queue to ask your question live. You can email us your question to info@businessfwd.org, and I'll read that aloud for you, or you can type your question into the chat window on the webinar screen. Again, you can press 1 to be entered into the queue to ask your question live, or if you'd just like me to ask your question, you can either email that to us at info@businessfwd.org, or you can type that into the chat box. And don't feel like you need to wait until the end of the presentation to ask those questions. We'll take questions throughout. Finally, the invitation to this call was widely distributed, and we are recording it, so please keep that in mind. With that, let's get started. Please welcome Nat Wood.
Thanks, Liz. It's exciting to be here. I love talking to Business Forward members, and I've been doing a lot of talking to Business Forward members about healthcare over the last few months. As you know, we are always interested in your opinions on different policy issues, from trade to our schools to the budget. You may not know that healthcare consistently ranks as the number one concern that Business Forward members lift up. And so while we're going to be talking generally about outreach and making public policy issues relatable today, we're going to do that with healthcare as the context. It's a great topic for us to be talking about because as business leaders, you have unique insights into the healthcare system, into the challenges of costs as employers, into the challenges patients face, because of course your patients as well, and many people in the Business Forward Network also work in the healthcare industry in one aspect or another. Let me give you a little bit of an overview of what I'm going to talk about today. First, we're going to spend just a few minutes talking about, sort of at a very high level, the basics of healthcare policy, healthcare reform, and the comments that Business Forward members have lifted up to us about the healthcare system. Then we're going to spend a fair amount of our time talking about rules to follow when you are dealing with the media or outreach in your community. And then we're going to talk about for a few minutes about best practices for specific types of media outreach. If there's one thing I want you to take away from this, I'm going to ask you to, you know, think about how you are knowledgeable, how you are an expert that has specific perspectives that you can bring to discussing healthcare or other topics, that your point of view as a business leader is important and valued, not just by us at Business Forward, but by people in your community and by the media. So we'll start with talking a little bit about the basics of healthcare. It is a huge part of the American economy. I think the best way to think about the size of the impact of healthcare on the economy is that nearly 1 in 10 workers in the United States is employed by the healthcare industry. Think about a big crowd, and 10% of those people, if you are representing the whole country, work in the healthcare sector. There are nearly 1 million doctors. There's nearly 3 million nurses. And there, in addition to all of the important preventive care that's going on all the time and all of the support that's going on, people in the healthcare industry perform more than 50 million procedures at 5,500 hospitals, and there are nearly 900,000 beds in the healthcare system. As I mentioned, we've been doing a lot of talking to business leaders about their perspectives on the healthcare system over the last few months, and I want to tell you a little bit about what they have been telling us. The first and most important is that the Affordable Care Act is working, and they want to see Congress improve it, not tear it down or repeal it. Under the ACA, nearly 20 million more Americans have insurance. The rate of healthcare cost increases has slowed down, and Americans have more choices. So while it's not perfect, it's something that business leaders really value and want to see protected. They've raised a lot of concerns about repealing the ACA, and the phrase I heard over and over when I was talking to business leaders about the healthcare system was, when you ask about so-called repeal and replace schemes, they say, replace it with what? They haven't seen anything viable offered, and really see anything that is talking about repeal and replace for what it is, just repeal. They also have raised some concerns about a government-run single-payer system, that it could be too risky, that it could be too expensive, and that there are better, more incremental ways to improve the healthcare system. Business leaders' voices are most valued when speaking from their experience in their companies, in their industries, in their communities. And what they've told us about the ACA is that there are some features that really benefit them as small business owners, for the people that are small business owners and entrepreneurs, that they value the ability to have insurance be portable, not to be worried about being losing coverage because of a pre-existing condition, and that helps them better run their businesses and start businesses as entrepreneurs. Business leaders, like lots of Americans, really value the protections in the Affordable Care Act for pre-existing conditions. That gives them an easier path to switching jobs and starting new businesses. Before, lots of people feared losing their insurance if they wanted to take a step to be an entrepreneur. Many of the people who I talked to who have started small businesses in the last few years said that they wouldn't have been able to start their business if it wasn't for the increased portability of the Affordable Care Act. Like lots of people, business owners appreciate the focus on preventive care in the Affordable Care Act, and lots of employers said they see it in their employees that they face less stress because they're not afraid that they're going to lose their insurance over a pre-existing condition. I've talked about how the Affordable Care Act helps people found new companies, and expanding coverage and choice helps keep costs down. Uninsured people are expensive to treat. They tend to still get their treatment, but they get it when a condition has progressed to become a crisis, and they tend not to get preventive care when they need it. So treating people earlier in the process and having more people covered holds down costs.
Thanks, Nat. So I have a question here. When you're thinking about which of these arguments that business leaders have made to us or the reasons that they support the Affordable Care Act, which ones do you think are the most important in terms of talking to neighbors or community members or, frankly, our employees when we're talking to them about why we support the Affordable Care Act?
I think that the first thing is to go with the basics, to explain what the Affordable Care Act is and what it does, that 20 million more people have insurance, that healthcare inflation has slowed, and that Americans have more choices. And then the second thing is to talk from the perspective as a business owner that, and I would say speak from your own experience. If you're an entrepreneur who's able to start your company because you didn't have to worry about losing health insurance, I talk about that. If you're somebody who has employees and you've seen them have take more advantage of preventive care, get sick less often, and face less stress, I talk about that.
Great.
So a little bit of the policy background, then we'll get into some of the advice for doing outreach in your community and to the media. A lot of healthcare experts, economists, and others talk about the three-legged stool of healthcare, that there are three pillars, and you need to have all three to have healthcare reform work and healthcare reform work and to have a healthcare system that works for everybody. The first is that coverage for pre-existing conditions. The second is making sure that all Americans have insurance, requiring everyone to buy insurance so that risks are spread across the marketplace. And the third, because some people can't afford the market cost of insurance, is to subsidize the cost of insurance for lower income families. We've talked a little bit about how the Affordable Care Act is working. I'm also going to add some of the specific risks that we've heard about alternative to reform. When you talk about the risks of so-called repeal and replace schemes, one is that all of those proposals that have been put forward in the last Congress would have eliminated the individual insurance mandate. So you'd have a shrinking pool of people with coverage. Threatens coverage for low-income people. And repeatedly, the Republican-led House voted to get rid of the protections for pre-existing conditions. So those are some of the specific risks of repeal and replace. When it comes to Medicare for All, some of the concerns we've heard from people relate to giving federal employees too much control over the healthcare system, concerns about delays in service, the quality of care, and the huge cost of that kind of change to the system. I'll tell you something specific if you wanted to be out now talking about healthcare reform and encouraging people to take a specific action. The news in the last couple of days is that signups under the Affordable Care Act are down about 10% over this pace last year. Of course, the administration has chosen to reduce a lot of the marketing that informs people about their options under the Affordable Care Act. So one of the things that we hope you do in talking to employees, to people in your community, is let them know that the Affordable Care Act is still working, is still helping people get coverage. And for people that don't get it through their workplaces, the signups are open right now. So now we're going to move on to some of the specific rules to follow when you're talking about any policy issue, and we're going to emphasize healthcare and healthcare reform. So the top thing, and this gets back to what I asked everyone to remember, is that because of your role as a business leader, you can make the business case for healthcare reform that really works for everyone. Often the audience we are most trying to reach is undecided Americans, whether they are voters or elected officials who haven't made up their mind about what kind of healthcare reform is best for the people in their community and their constituents. Undecided Americans trust business leaders and often trust them more than politicians when it comes to healthcare and other issues. So that's something I hope you'll keep in mind. Undecided Americans want to know about what the impact is going to be on them and people like them in their industry, in their town, or working for their company. As a business leader, you can help make that case and you can help explain those issues. And usually as a business leader, you deal with budgets. You deal with making decisions, and so a data-driven, results-oriented approach, the sort of thing that you make, the sort of information that you use to make decisions all the time, can really help depoliticize and be very persuasive when you're talking about issues like healthcare reform. The second principle I'd like to raise is before you're talking to any audience, whether it's in your community or to the media, think about what your role is and what your communications objective is. There's three types of objectives that I'm going to mention here. The first is raising awareness about a problem. People are busy. People are not always necessarily thinking about healthcare reform or other policy issues. You can inform them about what some of those issues are and what problems there might be in the policy community and how they can be approached. The second principle is pushing specific provisions or concepts during a legislative process or budget negotiation. You can be saying, here's why we need to support House Bill 3122. Here's why we need more money to fund marketing about the Affordable Care Act's health exchanges or other types of policy or budget, government budgeting issues. The third situation is if you're helping close a deal or supporting a tough vote. Tuesday, the state Senate will be voting on a specific provision. Or I want to make sure that our governor signs a specific bill. So that's sort of the third way of being involved in these policy discussions. If you're really trying to get something over the finish line and close the deal on a legislative or governmental process. The example on this slide is from Business Forward Network member Jim Ratcliffe, who runs a healthcare company in Arizona, and this is taken from an op-ed that Jim had published in the Scottsdale Independent a few months ago about healthcare reform. You know, this is one segment of a longer op-ed where Jim talks about the specifics of what is going on at his company and how it relates to national debate over healthcare reform in general. So here you see he's very specific in talking about what he wants. He wants Congress to stop looking for ways to repeal the ACA, and he makes a tie to the impact on his business.
We've got a question from, I think, from Michael Cook. Michael, your line is live. Go ahead and ask your question.
Will the slides be available?
Yes, they will. We'll make them available afterward.
And that's a good moment for me. One of the things I want to mention, and we're talking about how valuable it is to hear your voices. My contact information is on the first slide. So if you didn't have it, they'll be available later. And I am happy to talk to anyone who's on this call about healthcare reform specifically, or more generally, about how you can make your voice heard on important policy issues through the media or in your community.
And I've got a follow-up question to that that we got emailed in earlier from Carol Welch from Chicago, and she says, a lot of my employees think that they hate the Affordable Care Act, but it's really the only way I can afford to give them health insurance. I run a boat tourist service in Chicago. We've talked about so far today, and maybe you're going to cover this later, about what to say, but how do you recommend I communicate with my employees? They come to work, they leave. This isn't an environment where I'm emailing them on a regular basis.
Your employees may not understand, and I think I may have some small insight into this from talking to business leaders over the last few months. Many of them had a real passion in saying, this is what I can do for my employees, you know, and that the choices you face are to be smaller as a company and employ fewer people, or provide health insurance, or provide health insurance under the Affordable Care Act, as opposed to, you know, paying for more expensive insurance and employing fewer people. And so I think if you talk about those trade-offs and that you'd love to be able to afford health insurance, but it is one of the largest costs that people have, and that this has allowed you to provide it. I don't know your specific situation, but I know for many small business owners, it is also the only way that they can have health insurance. And, you know, being in that same boat is something that I think, so to speak, given your business, is something that I think people appreciate. And, you know, sharing that from your personal perspective, I think, is likely to be one of the most persuasive ways to, you know, get your employees again, on board. So
I think she might have been asking more, too, just about the, like, nuts and bolts. Should she put up posters in the break room or put notes in with her paychecks?
I think there's sort of two communications objectives that you have. One is how to let people know about your specific situation. I think that's sort of what I've answered. The other is how to let people know about their options under the Affordable Care Act. And you can tie those together, but there are lots of materials and opportunities out there that you can use to explain their options to get health insurance in your state under the Affordable Care Act. And I think you can tie some of that to how it allows you to provide health insurance. You're often going to have people, you know, it's a natural for employees to want more benefits, and that's a tension that we probably don't have an ability to completely relieve, but I think in this situation, you have real information that you can provide them both about the options that they have and why those are valuable and why those are the options that you are able to provide. So moving into the third set of advice that we're going to have, and that's to try to be really clear when you speak publicly about policy issues. That is, you don't necessarily want to have two sides. It's not necessarily an explanation. That can often be lost in the back and forth of the media. You really want to have something that is very clear about what your goals are. I like what John Kavanaugh, who runs a small business in Columbus, Ohio, says here. He says, this was from a letter to the editor in the Columbus Dispatch, I have no idea why some people in Washington, D.C. want to do away with a law that has improved health care for the first time in many years. It's very clear what his perspective is there. And in your style of how you make a presentation, you want to do it in the most hard-hitting, direct, and essentially the shortest way that you can. You know, news clips on the radio or TV are often, you know, just a few seconds. There is less and less space in newspapers for news. Elected officials are very busy, so you want to keep your answers focused and somewhat short. If you're explaining a very long concept, you know, let's say you're in a meeting with an elected official, you want to bookend that with, we're asking you to support this law, or here's the step we really want you to take. We want you to do that for three reasons and really have a one or two sentence reason for each one. And then if you need to give some background and say, now I'm going to give you more information, you can do that. But you really want to, you know, keep things concise and to the point. When you're dealing with the media, reporters can't quote you if your answers are too long. You won't fit in that space. You want to use complete sentences, and sometimes you want to repeat back some of the premise of the question. If somebody says, especially if you're talking for radio or TV, if somebody says, why do you support the Affordable Care Act? You want to say, I support the Affordable Care Act because it's expanded coverage to 20 million Americans who wouldn't have had it. You don't want to just say, it's the 20 million Americans, because it's hard to use that sort of sentence fragment. You want to repeat your point. If you're doing a recorded interview or an interview with a print person, you still want to do that because it helps the reporter have a couple of options they can cut into the piece, and it helps them understand what's really important. And you want to use local examples from your experience when you can. I like the quote here. Terry Milligan says, I'm not enthusiastic about a single-payer plan because I believe in giving choices and it would eliminate options for people. That's very direct. In building on the idea that you have unique information as a business leader that you can provide in your community and through the media, you want it to speak from that perspective as much as possible. You know, cite your employees and the experience with them. You know, explain that this is the only way you can provide insurance for your employees is because of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act. Speak to its impact on your customers and suppliers and your industry as a whole. That's where reporters are going to value your voice, and it's also where you're going to be most persuasive with your end audience. Most business leaders will name their company. when they speak. Refer back to, you know, Jim Ratcliffe of Ropar Pharmaceuticals. You know, that's part of what's appealing for a newspaper in printing his perspective. And it also helps people understand that as a CEO, he is an authority on how the Affordable Care Act has benefited his business. If for some reason you can't cite your specific company, you can talk about your experience. I've been a leader in the tech industry for 25 years, and here's what I've seen in that sort of way. The approach you take, and we'll come back to this a little later in some of the best practices, the approach you take in speaking to the media or presenting your case will be a little different depending on the type of media that you're using or that you're connecting with. So, for example, an op-ed, a column on the editorial page, will be like 500 or 600 words. Letter to the editor is less than 200. Now, sometimes if you've got a lot you want to say that's hard-hitting and the supports just run to 400 or 500 words, we can work you to turn something that might otherwise have been a letter to the editor into an op-ed, and that's great. You know, posts on social media are much more casual. Especially on Facebook and Twitter. LinkedIn is a little bit more buttoned up, but still, you know, it's going to have an air of informality to it. With TV, it depends on whether you're doing something live, which is going to be much more rare, or you're doing what is called, what is a taped interview, where you're doing a stand-up and they're going to use one soundbite. You know, in those soundbite interviews, you can repeat things, you know, you can take a moment, you can collect yourself, you can really make sure you're getting out what you are, and you don't really have to worry about the back and forth so much. In those taped interviews, also, you don't use the person's name very much because you don't really know how it's going to be cut together, and you want to make sure you're using complete thoughts so that it can be edited easily into something with a slightly different context.
I have a question here. You just talked about the difference between your voice and different interview settings, but if I'm going to do a TV interview or if I'm going to do a phone interview for radio or print, can I use notes?
It depends on the setting, as you said. I'll let you in on a secret. I have notes in front of me right now. So if you're doing something that's radio or a webinar or something, you know, just blatantly take your notes. Put them out in front of you. Even if you're going to a studio, the radio hosts have understood that. And remember, their job is to put on a show that goes well. So, you know, in thinking about reporters, editors, producers, they want to get the story right. They want what they put out to be engaging and appealing for the audience. It's much more likely that you're going to run into a reporter that is misinformed than one that's malicious. But often when I talk to business leaders who are getting ready for an interview, what they're concerned about is somebody who's malicious, who's out to get them. And really, that's pretty rare, and usually you can see that coming because somebody's a gotcha specialist or you know about attention or a reason why somebody would be out to get you. Most of the time, you really want to make it easy for them to put on a good show. So if you're talking to a reporter that's doing a print story, you know, having some notes may be okay. If you're doing it live, so you're in the same room, certainly if you're doing it over the phone, which is often the case, you have your notes right out in front of you. And I would recommend having some notes. I'm thinking through a message and having those points is a great idea. If you're doing one of those taped interviews where they're going to use a soundbite from it and it's video, you can have notes nearby, but you certainly don't want to have notes, you know, in front of you or in your hand when you're actually talking to the reporter.
Is it worth doing interviews with a reporter that you know has an agenda? For instance, if there's a very liberal or a very conservative reporter, or they've talked about a topic a lot and you really feel differently about whatever they're talking about and you feel like you have evidence, what tips do you have for going into the lion's den?
I think the main tip I have is thinking about your messages and, you know, staying on those messages. And I'll tell you, your messages are often going to break down to kind of three ways. This is the way I kind of think through almost any communications challenge. The first is, what's the problem? What's the issue? What people may not know you know, what's going on here. There are people in the world that don't know there's a debate about what sort of healthcare reform should we have in this world. So, you know, letting them know just a little bit about what that is and that that's a debate going on right now is important. The second is, what's your perspective, the person being interviewed, you know? And so you can have some of that really, you know, written out. You know, most reporters, even if they have a very different point of view, are not going to make something up. That's a very rare thing. And so if you stick to your messages, that's helpful. The third message often is, what can your audience do about it? You know, whether that's elected officials or people in the community, you know. And so I would really encourage people to always think about those three things. What's the problem? How do you want to frame that? What are you doing about it? You know, which may be here, what I'm doing in your company. It may be why you're out advocating for policy. And what can your audience do about it, whether your audience is expert or not. And I think if you stick to those, you're often going to have some value even in speaking to somebody that has a different perspective. One of the areas that Business Forward can add value, is if you're facing that sort of situation on a policy issue, we're happy to talk you through it. You know, if you're out there, you know, sharing your perspective, that's a part of our role, is to help you figure that out. And so sometimes it's worth having a conversation, both about whether to do an interview, although most of the time we're going to come down on there is some value, and how you're going to control it, how you're going to make sure that you've got that, you know, safe zone under your feet. So, and if you do that sort of thing, and if you make an effort to relate to reporters that, you know, want to get a story right, so you provide them some information, I always recommend that before or after, and it's fine either way, you have a conversation with a reporter. If you have information that you know will be helpful to them, a fact sheet, or, you know, some information that they may not otherwise access, I'd send it to them. Don't assume that they have, that they're collecting all of the information that you would want them to have if it's something beyond what you've told them. And then you get a chance to build those relationships, and, you know, they may come back to you over time and use you as a resource. Sometimes, you know, you going out of your way to help them put a story together when they need to means that they want to come back to you when you have a perspective that you really want to share with the world. You know, one of the ways that you can add value for reporters is to, you know, open up your place of business. If you have a factory or an office that is visually interesting to look at in any way, you know, inviting them in to experience that, or to talk to people in your network who can illuminate an aspect of policy, can really help them. And it's the same for elected officials. If you have an opportunity to build a relationship and invite them into your world, that often pays off over time. This next number eight gets back to some of the question that Liz was asking about. You know, if you get loaded questions, you're not obligated to answer them. And one of the ways that you move on from that is you can do what we call pivot. Now, generally, we want you to answer the questions. And you want to be present enough in an interview so that you can hear the question and then you can respond. We don't want you to think that you just take your notes and you just read off those notes and you don't actually answer the questions. But if you have someone that is really answering something that is loaded or unfair, you're not obligated to answer that. You can say, that's something that's not really in my area of expertise. You know, I'd be happy to try to connect you to someone else, or you're going to have to find someone else who knows more about that. If you really want to move back to your land, to your sort of safe zone, what I would suggest is using a phrase like, what I'm often asked is this, or what people in my community, you know, ask me about is this, or what my employees seem to want to know is, you know, what has the Affordable Care Act done for them, and then answering that question. Those messages are your safe zone. You know, then you can come back to that. So some of this relates to those type of questions. Just briefly, I want to talk a little bit about being on the record and not being on the record. Generally, we recommend being on the record. You know, there's lots of variations of being off the record, and the more you use them, the more risk there is that they're misunderstood and that something that you say but hope isn't going to be used is used anyway. Again, generally that's not malicious, but if you're shifting back around between I'm on the record, I'm off the record, this is on the record, or just between us, I'll say this, there's a lot of risk that what you say is going to be used anyway, often just as an accident or a misunderstanding. So our suggestion is to be on the record, act like you're on the record, at all times. You know, if there's something you really wouldn't want to see out there in the world, don't say it.
And I've got a question I'm going to follow up with here. This is from Craig Rosalie in Buffalo, New York. And he's asking, what do I do if I don't like the way my comments were used in a news story or if I think that they're inaccurate? And I think those are probably two different questions.
That's right. And I think if they are inaccurate, I would, as quickly as possible, contact the reporter, let them know what's wrong, and let them know how it can be corrected. That is specific language. You know, if they've gotten a fact wrong, give them what the correct fact is that you would suggest that they put this in. And if it's a big deal to you, you could say, could you run a correction? Sometimes these days, with the pace of, you know, online publishing and so on, they'll just correct it in the story. And different media outlets have different policies on that often, and I admire, when they note that they've made a change or a correction, the most legitimate media outlets will do that. So I would reach out to them right away. If it's something you don't like, but it's not strictly incorrect, it's more of a matter of interpretation, you can still reach out to the reporter. You can still share that information. You need to think a little bit about where the inaccuracy came from. If you're reaching the conclusion that the person is really pushing an agenda that's different, remember that your follow-up conversation with them is likely to also be on the record. And in fact, they're not going to respond if you say, you got this wrong, but don't quote me on it. So most of the time, I think you're really correcting something. If you're reaching a conclusion that somebody is misinterpreting what you are saying in a purposeful way, you know, that's the sort of thing we might want to talk about a little bit, how to respond to that. It's going to be a little bit more fact-specific, depending on what your situation is. Which kind of leads into this next one, which is, you know, pick your battles. But, you know, we definitely want to encourage you as business leaders to be involved in the policy discussion going on all the time, whether it's about healthcare or trade or education or immigration or the budget. You know, your voice is really important, and we want to work with you. So, again, one way to do that is you can reach out to me. You know, I'm working with Business Forward on an ongoing basis. My email is on the first slide. I would be happy to talk to you about how you can be out there making an impact in these policy debates.
We've got a couple questions on specific healthcare messaging questions. Should we cover your next section first, or should we answer these questions?
Why don't we go ahead and answer these questions?
Great. Okay, so this is from Allison Lorraine, and she says, thanks for running this conference. My question is regarding the need for taxpayer-funded subsidies for those who can't afford health insurance. Many who are opposed to the Affordable Care Act cite this issue. So what can we do to advocate for or to what policies will help lower or negotiate down health care costs themselves to save taxpayers' money and to save businesses' money?
Well, I think one of the values that the Affordable Care Act has brought is, you know, expanding coverage, which reduces the costs of paying for people that haven't gotten appropriate preventive care and are dealing with, you know, treatment in emergency rooms and those sort of things, and that lowers costs for everybody. I think you have a specific question about, can you actually, the last?
Yeah.
Here,
let me, sorry. No, but that's okay. I think her question was, oops, here it is. Yeah, it was, what can we do to help push for policies or what policies will lower or negotiate down healthcare costs themselves to save taxpayers' money? So I think there's two pieces to this. I think the first question is, in general, why are taxpayers paying more to help fund some insurance programs? But then a longer-term question about how we bend the cost curve.
And, you know, I think in a very general sense, part of it is by an emphasis on shoring up the system and making sure that the system, you know, fulfills those three legs of the stool, you know, covering pre-existing conditions, requiring people to buy insurance and subsidizing costs, and that we focus on how to do that effectively. You know, as you get deeper and deeper into healthcare policy, you realize, and you're there, that the specific negotiations with providers, with insurers, are very important. And that's where, at the federal level, the administration and states should be putting their energy into making sure that the treatments that are covered, the prices that are being paid for those treatments are appropriate, and all with the goal of expanding coverage, because that expansion of coverage generally, you know, reduces the costs from inefficiencies in the system.
There's also some challenges with the stability of the individual health insurance marketplace, and Business Forward will host a conference call actually with Congressman Kurt Schrader from Oregon, who's a real expert in this space. I think that it's on January 10th, but everybody on this call will receive an invitation for that. So at the beginning of the year, please watch out for that. We've got one more question I'm going to ask here before we move on to some final best practices. This is from James Edward, and he says, our North Carolina Republicans still haven't seen the light and expanded Medicaid. How can we get small businesses to advocate for the expansion? By arguing against single payer, do we at the same time undercut Medicaid expansion?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, really, there's a lot of great data points in terms of how states that have expanded Medicaid have benefited. It is, for example, one of the main factors that indicates whether the extent of the opioid problem, that people getting treatment through expanded Medicaid programs are less likely to have the most serious problems with opioids. So by collecting those data points and making that case, you know, that really is where the policy debate should be now. What are the achievable steps that can happen for improving the Affordable Care Act rather than throwing it out and starting with a completely different system? And, you know, again, we're happy to work with you on the specifics of how you can do that outreach in North Carolina.
Perfect. So we're going to move on to some best practices now. I think we talked a little bit about different tactics and different settings that you might be in, and these hopefully will be some things you can learn and or use in specific instances and specific types of communication.
And so I'll go through this fairly quickly. We're going to go a little bit deeper on specific tactics, specific types of outreach that can be done through the media. The first we're going to talk about is op-eds, those columns by guests on the editorial page, or it used to be when there were two-page editorial pages, that was the page opposite the editorial page. That's why they're called op-eds. And as we said, those tend to be 500 to 600 words. Being in that range is really important. And as somebody who works with clients in a range of industries, you know, people will have we've got so much to say. It's, you know, here's 1,200 words. It's just not going to get placed. They, as I said, the op-ed, the editorial page editors would much rather have something where they can feel confident that they're getting the guest's perspective in 500 words than something that's 1,500 words, and they're assuming that the editor is dying to provide that extra editing service.
I had a teacher who told us once that he wasn't going to assign anything that took longer than one latte to read, and your op-ed should be about the same length, right?
Yeah.
People are reading these on Sunday morning. And
what they want to know when they're making their decision, you know, is this an important issue? You know, why is Medicaid expansion in North Carolina so important? And it's because there are people that are not covered, and it's because that those people that are not covered are that's inefficient, and it's driving up costs to the system overall. You know, is it timely? Is this something that's being debated? And I'd say in North Carolina, you know, the state is behind the curve, that many states, even with Republican governors, I know that's not the situation in North Carolina now, have passed Medicaid expansions, and that because of changes in the legislature, there's an opportunity to make that happen now. You know, does it have a significant local angle? You know, if and often that's where you as a business person have something that you can add. You know, here's how it's affecting your company or people in your community, which also relates to your credibility and how that's interesting. Letter to the editor is going to be much shorter, you know, 200 words or less, and is often essentially a single point. You know, if you're going to do, what's the problem, what am I doing about it, what can you do? No more than two sentences for each of those things, and really probably one sentence for much of those. Blogs, there's often a lot more flexibility in the length, but they need to be pointed, and the opinion side of that needs to be really clear, and you really want to come through with your own voice on that. TV and radio, we've talked a little bit about. You know, you have limited time, you know, have those 3 points. Practice before you speak with the reporter, but don't practice so much that you sound like a robot. You know, you do want to have enough presence so that you're actually listening to the reporter and interacting with them, not just giving a speech.
Even if you're well-trained in this, that can be really easy to mess up. I was a spokesperson for a project once, and we had a very specific statement and a set of talking points, and I had literally said the same thing to 20 reporters, and I had somebody ask me, are you reading from a statement? And I wasn't, but I had just said it so many times, and I was so kind of tired that it just came across that way. So it's really true that you want to be prepared, but not over-practiced.
And one of the things you can do in really any interview, it will come across more in a TV interview where people are going to see your face, but even if you're in, you know, doing radio or doing a print interview, is look at the reporter. If you're there with them, you know, interact with them and have that exchange a little bit. Unless you're talking about something horrific, unless you're sharing the story of how somebody's lack of insurance, you know, led to a terrible situation, smile. You know, part of what you're going to do is talk about solutions, and that's a good thing, and that's an opportunity to smile. The next couple slides we will do very quickly. Social media tends to be about a moment, what's happening right now, and how does your perspective relate to that. And our second piece of advice that I will hit here is don't get bogged down with negativity. If there is, you know, sarcasm won't be read as sarcasm. It'll just be read as, and that's really true in anything. Sarcasm is not a great approach to communications. But if people are bringing negativity, you know, you're much better to respond to that with factual information that is persuasive. Finally, a lot of this is building up to talking to elected officials. Your perspective as business leaders is particularly valued by elected officials. You know, hopefully you can build relationships with them over time and become a trusted source of information. You want to focus on your elected officials, the people that represent you and your community. And there's lots of ways you can do that. You can do it through letters. We suggest delivering letters by email. You can do it through calls. You want to identify yourself as a constituent and a business person. If you're dealing with a member of Congress, ask for their legislative assistant that's covering the issue that you deal with. If you're dealing with a more local official, you may be able to reach them directly themselves. And request a meeting where you can deliver your points in the ways that we've discussed here, you know, directly and clear. Also, you know, if you want to offer to follow up with a meeting in the district, if you're dealing with somebody in Congress, you know, when you're talking to that legislative assistant, you can say you'd love to speak to a senior staffer or the member of Congress themselves in your district.
Great.
So
thank you.
I really appreciate everybody taking the time to listen.
I think we've probably got a couple more questions here. I just want to fit in before the end. I know we're running a little bit long on time, but I just want to touch base about them. This is a question from Yolanda Martin in Phoenix, and she says, I'm really interested in talking about how different policy issues affect my business, but I don't have any relationships with local reporters. Do you have any tips on how to be the person that they call when they want to talk to a local business leader? I see lots of people talking all the time on TV and in news stories who are very underinformed.
By being part of the Business Forward Network, you've made a connection that can help you make those connections. So I think one thing is to reach out to us. We do have tools that we can use to sort of identify, you know, who is active in a local area or interested in particular issues. One thing you can do is be a consumer of media, you know, whether it's doing some searches on the internet or thinking about who is covering your issue over time. And when you reach out to them, note, I see that you've been covering the healthcare debate in Washington, and something I see people say a lot is this: I have a different perspective. Or here's an angle on it that you might not have thought of. Or I have a business and it affects us in this way. I'd be happy to talk to you about it. You know, you don't have to say you need to write about this. You can say, if you're going to be writing about healthcare reform again, I'd be happy to share my perspective.
Great. Well, I think that's it for the questions that I have. I don't think I've missed any emailed questions. If so, we will certainly get back to you. Thanks to Nat for this presentation today. I think it was really informative, and it was nice to cover. I know we've done some media trainings in the past. It was nice to cover both talking to the media, talking to your community members, and really talking to members of Congress and local elected officials. And that's a piece that's really important here. You don't always have to communicate through the media to get to these people. Most of them want to be pretty accessible, but you certainly want to prepare for those meetings and those conversations or even public events where you might run into them in the same way. So thank you, Nat, for your time. And really thanks to all of you for taking time out of your busy schedules to join us. I know you're running businesses and you have families and other obligations, so we appreciate that you're interested in this work. And as Nat said, we're really eager to work with you to help connect you to your local media, whether or not that's through writing an op-ed or a letter to the editor, or when we find out that a radio reporter wants to interview somebody locally about either a local or a state issue. So please stay in touch with us. We're looking to do more. Please check your email in the next couple days. It'll take a little while for the recording to render, but we will send out a recording of this call, and we'll also send you a post-event survey, and we really want to hear from you about what worked and what didn't work, and next time we do a training like this, what topics did we not cover that you would really like us to. So with that, as I mentioned, we do have one more conference call, at least one more conference call before the end of the year here at Business Forward. Next week we'll be talking about reinventing America's high schools and what the future of work might look like. So please watch for that invitation. That call is on Tuesday. And then we will have another call on healthcare right at the beginning of the year to talk about the new issues that the new Congress might face with Congressman Kurt Schrader from Oregon, who's a real expert on the policy side of the issues. Nat's a real expert on how to talk about them. And Congressman Schrader has been working on these issues for a long time and is a substantial proposal about how to shore up that individual healthcare marketplace, and we'll be eager to have you join us for that. We'll talk to you all again soon. Thanks again for your time today. We look forward to working with you.